Well, good afternoon. I remember as a kid, maybe you've had this experience before. I know I did multiple times, and no matter what age, you might have had it as well, where you came along somewhere and you saw a little piece of broken glass on the ground, and maybe it was near like a junk pile or something, or a cycling center, or maybe just walking along the beach, and you came across a piece of broken glass. Maybe it was green, they're often green, and you pick it up, and maybe it's sharp on some edges, but you turn it over and there are smooth lines. There's sort of lines that run parallel that are nice and smooth to your thumb and finger. And if you're imagining this, that feel in your fingers, probably at least a few of you know what I'm talking about. That you recognize it comes from a bottle, but not just any bottle. What kind of bottle does it come from?
Coke.
A Coke bottle. That's right. That's right. It comes from a Coke bottle. And there's an interesting story about why you can pick up that piece of glass and recognize that it comes from a Coke bottle. A little more than 100 years ago, Coca-Cola had a problem. They were already the most popular soda as they are today, but they were so popular that other companies were trading on their name. They were copying the design of the label, putting on their bottles, and they would have names like Coca-Nola, Ma Coca-Co, Toca-Cola, and Coke spelled with a K. And they would make these labels. They looked just like it. So that problem got so big for Coca-Cola that they finally said, here's what we're going to do. We're going to convince our more than 1,200 bottle company suppliers to change bottles from what they had before, which was just a standard shaped bottle. They convinced all those companies to change to a distinctive bottle shape that they trademarked to protect their product and protect their name. They actually trademarked the shape of the bottle. A trademark is a pretty neat thing. It lets you tell the world, this is me. This represents me. It represents my workmanship. Anything else is fake. Nothing else is the real deal. And we all care about protecting our own reputations, I think. We care about protecting our name. Probably most of us in this room, we want to protect our reputation as a hard worker, or perhaps as somebody who's welcoming, somebody who's kind. But you know, there's lots of other people who have to protect their reputation. Like, think about crime bosses. They have to protect their reputation as a brutal overseer. You know, they have to do things to protect that reputation. Rock stars or some other kind of anti-hero, you know, they have to go break the rules every now and then to protect their reputation, protect their name as someone who has this rebellious image. And I think on a similar, but not unrelated note, many of us are either teenagers or have been. And we know that many teenagers often work to protect their, cool, but I totally don't care image. They work very hard to protect that image. So everybody's working to protect their name. But how about God? Let's turn back to Exodus 20. Exodus 20. Does God care about his reputation, about his name? In fact, did God even go so far as to make a trademark law? Well, he did. He actually put his trademark law in the Ten Commandments. And we find it in Exodus 20, verse 7. It's the third commandment, God's trademark law, which says, "You shall not take the name of the Lord your gain, the Lord your God in vain, for the Lord will not hold him guiltless who takes his name in vain." Now, many translations will phrase this as, "Do not misuse the Lord's name." When you hear that, when you hear me read that verse, probably each of us has something come to their mind that's the first thing you think of when you think of obeying that command. How do you obey this commandment? What's this commandment all about? Well, that first thought you have, just hold it in your mind for a moment. Let's look over to Exodus 28, a few chapters later, but still here at Mount Sinai. Exodus 28, I think there's an interpretive key here. And as you turn there, I think the appropriate place to start talking about this commandment, the third commandment, is to just pause for a moment and ponder the risk that God is taking every day when he places his name on people, the risk that he's taking. You know, I think all of us who are parents, when we send our kids to an activity or a summer camp or something, there's a part of us that hopes they don't go do something that embarrasses us, you know? But we have a creator God that we serve, the one who says, "My thoughts are not your thoughts, and my ways are higher than your ways." And he's chosen for thousands of years now to place his name on various people through time to act as his representatives on earth to other people. Flawed, inconsistent people who fail over and over, like, for instance, the nation of Israel. People who are not even led by God's Spirit sometimes. And here, still at Mount Sinai, he physically placed his name on the priesthood, on Aaron. He placed his name on Aaron the priest as a representative for all Israel. If you were God, would you take that risk? Would you take that risk with people to say, okay, I'm going to put my name, my reputation, and put them on these people who fail over and over? And you know, much of the rest of your book about this much after that is just the stories of people failing at this, you know? But this is how it pleases God to work with us. God gives detailed instructions here where Aaron must physically wear the names of Israel. He wears them on these stones that are on this special outfit that he wears. And then he's got this turban, this hat, where he's got this plate that says God's name. It says Yahweh. It says holiness to Yahweh. So he's wearing these things. In verse 29, it says, "So Aaron shall bear the names of the sons of Israel on the breastplate of judgment over his heart when he goes into the holy place." And this statement where it says bears the names, that's the same Hebrew construction that we read earlier at Sinai in Exodus 20 when we read, take the name in the third commandment. That word translated to bear or to take, it's actually fairly easy for English speakers to remember because its basic meaning is to lift up. And the word is nasa. You could spell it N-A-S-A, nasa, to lift up. I think you just picture the space shuttle, and it's a pretty easy thing to remember. It also means to carry. And we see here Aaron is acting out a metaphor here. He's representing all of Israel, whose name he's lifting up in this verse. And he's acting out, by doing this, the first thing that God told Israel when they first came to Mount Sinai, which is a bunch of chapters earlier, in Exodus 19:6. When they got to Mount Sinai, the first thing he told them was, "And you shall be to me a kingdom of priests and a holy nation." And that's what Aaron's acting out. That's the ideal. This is what God said. This is my vision for you. This was the goal. And so it's against that backdrop that God says, don't take my name in vain. As a result of placing his name on his people, he gets put on the hook for a lot of things. He puts his reputation on the line. And then you see through the story of the kings and the prophets that he often had to intervene and bring judgment. And much more often he had to bring mercy on Israel, in his words, for my name's sake, because he had attached his name to these people. So what about us? Is it any different for us today as Christians? We may not always think about it, but we take God's name every single day. We have to. We can't leave home without it. He actually places his name on us. When we're baptized into the name of the Father and the Son, Jesus Christ. Even before you're baptized, if you're just a kid coming here, you're not baptized yet, people still know you as someone who goes to church here. They still connect you with this name. Let's turn over to Romans 2. Romans 2, so if that is bearing God's name, what does it look like to bear God's name in vain? Well, when we carry the name Christian, our behavior, everything that we say or we do, it either honors God or it dishonors God. And that's one reason why hypocrisy is such a big deal to God, because hypocrisy damages God's good name. In Romans 2, verses 21 through 24, the Apostle Paul writes, "You, therefore, who teach another, do you not teach yourself? You who preach that a man should not steal, do you steal? You who say, do not commit adultery, do you commit adultery? You who abhor idols, do you rob temples? You who have made your boast in the law, do you dishonor God through breaking the law? For the name of God is blasphemed among the Gentiles because of you." Here Paul's saying that if non-Christians trash God's name because they see hypocrisy from Christians, that those Christians bear responsibility for God's name being taken in vain here. We carry God's name every day, and it's an incredible privilege to do that. But it's also a responsibility that touches every part of our lives. In many ways, I think you can look at the third commandment then and look at it as the hypocrisy commandment, at least for those who have a relationship with God, who are in a committed relationship with God, a covenant relationship. It's the hypocrisy commandment. Now, I'm guessing by now that there's probably a few kids here that are thinking something. Maybe you've already turned and whispered it to your parents. When's he going to talk about swearing? Well, I'll do that now. When I was a kid, I thought of this as the swearing commandment. And, you know, don't use God's name to swear, being part of it. I hope that you see that this commandment is way bigger than that. It encompasses a lot more things, but I hope that you also see how that is a legit part of it. That well, let's turn to Matthew 5. Let's turn over to Matthew 5. God requires us to give his name and the name of Jesus Christ the respect that they're owed. We don't want to throw God's name around casually, and we don't want to throw out curses or even blessings casually. People like to use God's name because God's power is associated with it. That's why it has punch. That's why it has impact. And so in the middle of the Sermon on the Mount, in Matthew 5:33, Jesus Christ, he addressed swearing. He said in Matthew 5:33, "Again, you have heard that it was said to those of old, 'You shall not swear falsely, but shall perform your oaths to the Lord.' But I say to you, do not swear at all, neither by heaven, for it is God's throne, nor by the earth, for it is his footstool, nor by Jerusalem, for it is the city of the great king. Nor shall you swear by your head, because you cannot make one hair white or black. But let your yes be yes, and your no, no. For whatever is more than these is from the evil one." I say this especially to the teens out there, I would say the most. If you're tempted to use God's name when you're talking to your friends, or to use an intensifier word, a word like damn, in relation to something else, which, you know, that's a word that calls on a power that only God can carry out. I would challenge you in that moment where you're tempted to use one of those words to really just stop and think about what's going on inside your brain at that moment, to think about what's happening. Ask yourself, what's really driving me to want to pick that word? And I think what you'll find is that you're wanting to add a little bit of extra weight, a little bit of extra power, a little bit of extra punch to your own words. You'd like to borrow just a little bit of power that comes from somewhere else for your own purposes. And our words can become so habitual that you can feel like, well, I just use these words and I don't really think about them. But there's still always a reason behind why we wanted to pick these words. God's name carries power, and everybody knows it. And that's why people want to use it. We don't swear by other people's names because their names don't carry power. My name doesn't carry power. God's name carries power. And that's why people also say things like geez and OMG and or darn or things like that. All these things that are just one step away from the power of God's name. Those people know that it's wrong to take his name in vain, but yet they still want the effect of tapping into that power associated with his name. But it's the same thing. It doesn't make it any less vain. So Coca-Cola, they had a problem with fakers. They had a problem with sodas that posed as being Coca-Cola but were not. So this is the neat part of the story. They sought out a glass developer to come up with that new bottle, and they gave him a design brief that was very simple. It had just two requirements. First, the new bottle needed to be so distinct that you would recognize it if you grabbed it in the dark, if you touched it in the dark. And it had to be, the second one was that the bottle had to be so distinct that you would recognize it lying broken on the ground. In other words, you could pick up almost any shard from it, from that broken bottle, and recognize that it came from a Coca-Cola bottle. What happens when people interact with us? Should they encounter a small, recognizable piece of God's Spirit? Now, we're all still flawed. We're all still growing, and I'm just blown away when I think about this, and I think you should be too, about the privilege that we have of bearing God's name, that he does that, and that we can bear his name on our lives. As the Apostle Peter put it, "Praise God for the privilege of being called by his name." Now, we are borrowing his righteousness because it's God's righteousness that covers us, but our lives must be a testament to what happens after that. Whatever we do will either reflect well or reflect poorly on God. So we need to make sure we don't bear God's name hypocritically or borrow the power in his name for our own purposes. So let's lift it up and carry it in a way that honors him.